Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online, inviting you to subscribe to our other podcast called The Grave Talks. It's where I sit down and interview individuals who've had extreme paranormal situations happen to them in their lives. Just search The Grave Talks on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Be sure to press subscribe and give us some stars to help spread the word that this show exists. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, the haunted Marysville home. Dogs going mad, beds shaking, mental oppression, and strange voices heard out of nowhere. Just the tip of the iceberg when describing the haunted Marysville home that Yvonne lived in for several years. What should have been a comfortable home for her and her family turned into anything but. Was there something that the home sat on that caused her and her family such torment? Why did the entity at the haunted Marysville home attempt to mimic her family members? And just how far would this dark entity go to torment Yvonne and her family?
I have had What was that?
I didn't say anything.
Okay. I don't know how interested you are in what happened before the Marysville house, but I can tell you a little bit about the events that happened to me before that, because there were a couple that were remarkable. First is the one that I detailed in my email to you, where I talked about the fact that we lived in a house in Bethel, Connecticut when I was young. And back in those days, everybody had 5 or 6 kids. So one night in the summer, we were all playing hide and seek, and the home base tree was in our front yard. And the we were not it at that time, but whoever was counting was at the tree counting. And I looked at my best friend and I said, "Let's hide in my house. Nobody will be there. Nobody will come. And we'll be able to look out the bathroom window. We'll run upstairs, go to the second floor bathroom. We'll be able to see the tree from the bathroom window." And she was okay with that. So we went in the house and I turned around behind me and locked the front door. And then ran to the back door and locked that door. All of the windows in the house were closed and locked because my stepfather was an air conditioning person, and he was going to darn well make sure that we did not let that air conditioning out. And so we went upstairs to the second floor bathroom, and we're sitting there. I'm sitting over by the toilet looking out the window at the home base tree, and she's sitting on the edge of the bathroom tub. And all of a sudden, the doorknob in the bathroom started turning rapidly back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Now, we're the only two in the house. The other kids are outside. My parents were gone. And she looks at that door and she looks at me and she starts crying. And she said, "What are we going to do?" And I said, "We're going to open the door and we're going to run out of here." And she said, "You first." So I did. And when I pulled that door open, the handle was still going back and forth rapidly, but there was nobody there on the other side of that door. And we ran out of the house. That's the first time that something really major happened.
What was going through your mind at that moment when you had that occurrence, when that handle is going, you know, this is not clearly, you know, normal for anything. Right. What are you thinking at that moment?
Well, I was about 9 at the time, and already by that point in time, I had experienced enough stuff in that house, little stuff like the downstairs toilet. It did not matter how many times we replaced the ring, and my stepfather must have replaced it 5 or 6 times. That toilet would flush, and if you happened to be standing there, you could see the handle move and when it was flushing. So I don't think it was a plumbing problem. I think this was beyond that.
Yeah.
The other thing that was happening was there were shadow figures and voices in the house and lots of poltergeist type of activity, like things would go missing and you'd find them in a place that was just totally not what you would expect. So a couple of times I remember my parents' keys going missing, and, you know, a couple of months later they'd find them in the freezer, in the back of the freezer. So this was not, it was not normal activity that was going on in the house. We learned sometime after we moved into the house that there had been, that the house had a history, basically. There had been a robbery of a bank in the town that we were living in, and apparently the robber took off, and when the police got to him, he had run into the house that we had bought, and they shot him, and he died there. And so we figured that that might be part of what the what was going on in the house. It's, you know, that that energy was left there or whatever.
What, so, what were some of the other occurrences that happened in that house that made you truly believe it was haunted?
Another time in the within the first year that we moved into the house, I happened to be, we had a pool in the backyard, and I happened to look up at the attic window because I could feel somebody watching me, and there was a figure in the window. On another occasion, there were just a number of things that happened there too. On another occasion, there were, my parents were away. It was just me and my older stepbrother who were at the house. I was sleeping in my parents' room, which was the only room that had a TV in it in the upstairs. And I woke up in the middle of the night because I heard a man and a woman talking, and I could hear, I heard them for a couple of minutes, and then I heard them come down the hallway outside of my parents' bedroom. And that made me get up and go to my stepbrother's room, and I ended up sleeping on the beanbag chair in his room. So those are the main things from there. It was, even that amount of stuff was not as dramatic as the stuff that happened in the Marysville house and one incident in between. When I got to be about, I had to have been just turned 18 not too long ago, not too long before this happened. And I had just gotten married maybe 4 or 5 weeks before this happened. So my, and I was in the military. So my husband did not know my family because I was 3,000 miles away from my family at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And he was working nights back then, and he was sleeping. He was not in the military at that point. And I came home from work, and you'll see that this incident is very similar to something that happened at the Marysville house as well. I decided that I was going to clean the bathroom, and I know it was a Monday night because I used to teach line dancing on Monday nights at the NCO club with my then husband. And I began to, the first thing I did was take my uniform off, and I was, this was the embarrassing part. I was cleaning the bathroom in my underwear, and I knelt down and I'm cleaning the toilet, and I felt somebody watching me. So I turned my head to look, and there in the doorway of the bathroom was a figure, a white figure, about probably 6'3" tall. And my first thought was to turn away from it, and I did, and I got up at that point, and I thought, you have just smelled too much toilet bowl cleaner. And so I looked back again at the doorway, thinking that this was probably exposure to the chemicals of the toilet. And it was still there. So I walked over to it. And when I got about 8 inches from it, I reached out to touch it. And it disappeared at that point. So as soon as that happened, I started to get a really weird feeling that there was something wrong with somebody in my family. And my first thought was, well, maybe it's my husband, because he was asleep and he had worked during the night, and maybe something had happened. So I went in and I checked on him, and everything was fine. He was still sleeping, and there was still a little bit of time before he had to get up to go teach the line dancing class with me. And so I let him sleep, and the feeling is getting worse and worse while he's sleeping. Finally, I couldn't deal with the feeling anymore. So I woke him up, and by then, and over that period of time too, the sense of what had happened had developed. So by the time I woke him up, I knew that somebody in my family had been in a car accident, but I did not know who. So I woke him up and I'm telling him the story of what happened. I'm telling him what I saw, and I'm telling him that I know somebody in my family had been in a car wreck. And he looks at me and he said, "You're nuts. It's just your imagination. Yeah, you probably had exposure to the toilet bowl cleaner, and that just, you know, that's the whole cause for the whole thing. There is nothing going on." And in the and while he's saying this, the anxiety about it is building and building and building. And finally, he says, "Well, I'm going to call Frank." Frank was the guy who DJed for us while we taught dancing, "and find out what the music lineup will be for tonight, so that I can know what dances we're going to teach." And I said, "No, don't call Frank, because my mother is going to call in 10 minutes and she's going to tell us who was in the car accident." And as I was saying it, that was my first knowledge of that. So I didn't know, in other words, that she was going to call or that she was going to tell us who was in the accident until the words were coming out of my mouth. And he said, "Well, you're nuts. This is just, the whole thing is nuts. It's crazy. Nothing happened. Everything is fine." So he proceeds to make the call to Frank. And when he makes the call, I'm sitting there for a second watching him, and I got up because I was just churning. My whole insides were churning over this knowledge. And I walked to the door and I turned around. And as I turned around, I saw his face turn as white as a sheet, and he dropped the phone. And he said, "Who's Francis?" And remember, he didn't know my family because we'd only been married a few weeks, and I lived 3,000 miles away from my family. And I said, "That's my mother." He said, "The operator just broke in with an emergency call from Francis." And I said, "Hang up the receiver so she can put the call through." And I ran to the extension, and it was my mother calling to tell me that my sister had been in a car accident and she was in a coma. So my whole life has been sort of peppered with those kind of things. And I'll tell you more about that, the ones that happened at the Marysville house, as we go through that.
When you had this experience and you knew out of nowhere, just boom, you're speaking that, "Hey, my mom's going to call and tell us this information." I mean, what's going through your mind when you know, obviously people around you are like, "Huh? Like, that sounds crazy." How are you feeling at that moment in time? Are you feeling like, "Am I crazy?" Or like, what's going through your head?
Yeah, I was thinking I was a little bit crazy, but I'd had a number of smaller incidents like that where things had happened. Like when I was younger, my mother would be driving and I would be relaxing in the seat next to her, and I would sit up because I would have a sense that that something was going to happen. And I would look and I would tell her, "Be careful when you get up by that car, because it's going to pull into our lane at the last second. If you're not careful, it's going to hit us."
Yeah.
And so I was kind of used to that, but not on that grand of a scale. And it was very weird when it happened. And in fact, I really thought I was losing it at that point.
I hope you enjoyed your 15-minute preview of our new podcast, The Grave Talks. Be sure to subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download podcasts to not miss any episode of the show. New episodes every single Monday. Just search for The Grave Talks and then press subscribe. Give us a review while you're at it and some stars that will help us grow in the rankings and let other folks know that the show exists to make an even better show for you. The Grave Talks. Check it out at thegravetalks.com.